You're listening to Central Time. I'm Shereen Seward in for Rob Barrett. Now, the snow has arrived and winter is truly upon us here in Wisconsin. It is the perfect time to make hearty, warming dishes. Today on Food Friday, we're celebrating the art of braising, cooking meats and vegetables low and slow. Our next guest recently showcased his cooking chops on Food Network. He's here to talk about his experience representing Wisconsin on the national stage and teach us how to perfect our braising technique to create one pot wonders from the comfort of home. You can join in too. 800-642-1234. Tell us, what are your favorite meats and vegetables to braise during the winter season? Do you have a one-pot recipe you keep coming back to? What questions do you have about taking your braising game to the next level? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Dan Fox is the chef and owner of Heritage Tavern in Madison and the Fox Heritage Farms and Willow Creek Farms. Dan, welcome to Central Time.
Hello. Hi. Thank you.
Well, thanks for being
here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. You competed on Food Network on Chopped, and the episode aired last month. For people who haven't ever seen the show, what is the premise and what was the experience like?
I'm sure most folks out there now are somewhat familiar with reality TV. And the premise around reality cooking shows, you know, they bring in professionals in their industries, in the cooking industry, and you go on, and there's many different shows like this. But Chopped is kind of unique in the sense that the name Chopped, there's four contestants, and three of which get chopped, or, you know, they don't make it till the finish, the final. And it's one person that doesn't get chopped at the end. So I was lucky enough to compete, like you mentioned, about a month ago. And you can find that online if you just Google Chopped. It was actually a really amazing episode, all focused around Julia Child. Julia Child being such an iconic food figure. I am very fond of Julia. I used to watch Julia Child as a kid, you know, sitting on the couch, flipping, you know, surfing through. I was back when there was just regular TV.
Yeah.
And, you know, not those fancy stuff. So you'd see Julia pop up, and that was one of the reasons why they chose me to be, they actually reached out to me to choose me to be on the show, because I have a kind of a Julia Child background. And I'm classically French trained, which really leans into one of, you know, a lot of Julia's specialties. So this Chopped reality food TV show, there was a series, so it was 16 contestants. And if you won the first round, you moved on to the second one. So it was actually 2 days of filming. And the each round, you get four mystery. It's a mystery basket for each round. And it starts out with an appetizer and then an entree and then dessert. And the thing about Chopped, for the appetizer, it's only 20 minutes that you have to prepare this item. So you have to prepare a whole dish in 20 minutes. And you really don't know what the ingredients are going to be beforehand. Of course, this being a Julia Child themed show, the first one was French onion soup, and the ingredients they gave me were veal ossobuco or raw veal shanks, mm-hmm. A blooming onion, a day old blooming onion from like TGI Fridays.
Okay.
And some random fancy French onions, and the last ingredient, I think it was like champagne or something. And you have to create an appetizer out of these four ingredients. And then there's like a pantry of items that you get to go rummage through. And it's pretty chaotic.
A lot of pressure, yeah.
A lot of pressure, yeah. And everything, you really don't have very much time. It's like just minutes before you see the mystery basket items and you have to go. So, yeah, it brings out a lot of anxiety, and there's cameras everywhere. And it was a lot of fun.
What was your?
It was quite the experience.
What was your biggest takeaway? I mean, what did you love the most about it?
You know what? I'm, as I mentioned, I'm classically French trained, and I'm kind of from the old school French era of, you kind of got yelled at and long, grueling hours, and it was not the most fun job. It was the most glamorous job. The kitchens have definitely evolved now, but I tend to take myself a little bit too seriously in the kitchen. And you can kind of see in the episode, and the judges were bouncing off, you know, in conversation with me that, you take yourself so serious, you know. And one of the Julia Child's biggest thing is just to remember to have fun in the kitchen, that you're going to make mistakes. It's the love of cooking and to not forget that. So that was something you can almost kind of forget when you've been doing it as long as I have.
Well, Dan, it sounds very cool. Still, though, like we said, a lot of pressure. So instead of just taking 20 or 30 minutes to make a dish, we're going to slow down the pace a little bit and talk about a little bit more relaxed method of cooking, braising. So explain, what exactly is braising and what do you love about it?
Braising is a very low and slow cooking method. And I think it's really amazing for this time. It always reminds me of very comforting. When you walk into a home or wake up in the morning and someone's cooking and whatever they're cooking is perfumed throughout the entire house. And as the day goes on, that smell just matures. And it really, that the idea of the one pot wonder is really where my heart lies with cooking. So combining a lot of hearty ingredients and having that low process and that the meats and how the maturity of flavors with the meats as that low, slow braising method is really amazing.
Well, what are the best meats to use? I mean, is there a specific cut of meat that you recommend for braising over anything else?
I mean, pork shoulder is an amazing cut to braise. We actually raise heritage pigs. It's kind of something that we're known for. So one of my favorite cuts is the Boston butt. It's the top of the pork shoulder from really well-raised animals, or the shoulder of a beef the same. It's a lot of marbling, of a lot of connective tissue, a lot of development of flavor as it cooks and breaks down.
So when it's time to braise something, how do you pick the right temperature and the right length of time for the meat that you've chosen? Is there some kind of crazy math to it, or?
There is. It's a little bit more of, the nice thing is if you're cooking a larger cut of meat, and when I say larger, maybe like a 2 or 3 pounds piece, like let's just envision a 2 pounds piece of pork shoulder, or let's say it's a 2 pound piece of beef short rib. We can kind of compare those two, and you would cook it at low temperature, so you're pretty much your very quick synopsis of it. You sear meat, sear some vegetables, and go as in depth as someone wants. Deglaze, we typically call it, or hit when it's the pan's really hot. There's all those little caramely bits at the bottom. Hit with some like red wine, so maybe some tomato paste, and then a really flavorful stock, like canned broth or something is just fine. And seared meat, seared vegetables, the broth, the tomato paste, wine, and you set the temperature to about 190 to 200, maybe not quite 300 degrees. Mm-hmm. And depending on how low you have it, it's really the margin of error grows. So you can overcook or be on the side of overcooking by a half hour to an hour. So it really it's not as stressful as like searing a steak maybe.
Okay.
To the temperature.
Okay. Well, talk to me about the browning and searing before starting the braise. Why is that important? What does it accomplish?
So it's really development of flavor, that Maillard reaction, that caramelization. That's same as like grilling a piece of meat. It develops, it's a lot more flavor. So getting that deep, it's more of like a medium to medium high heat, maybe medium heat. And really when you put a piece of meat in the pan, it needs to sizzle, not like smoking. But a little smoke is, don't be afraid of some smoke in the pan, and get a nice little sear on there. And you want it to kind of be a deeper sear, not just like a shallow sear on it, the piece of meat. And you'll do that on all four sides or three sides or six sides or whatever your piece of meat looks like. And at that point in time, you can remove the piece of meat out of the pan and put your vegetables in, or you can put the vegetables in along with the piece of meat and caramelize those as well. Depending on how big your pan is, you never really want to crowd. So it's selecting the right pan or pots, Rondo or whatever, cast iron, La Crusade, Rondo type pan, or a slow cooker, more deep walled pan. So you can have a liquid that comes up. And the thaw process is a third to a quarter of the piece of meat is showing. So you'd want to have that much surface area in your pan. So nonetheless, you see the piece of meat, see the vegetables, and then when you, that caramelization, that fond, we call it, on the bottom of the pan. There's all those little caramely bits, and it's caramelized meats like onions or garlic or tomatoes, you know, whatever you put in there. And then so when you want to hit that with red wine or white wine, depending on what direction you're going with your dish, and that really that acid and fruity flavor of the wine, along with maybe some tomato products, it really adds a really nice depth of flavor and roundness. And then you put in that flavorful stock up to about two-thirds, three-quarters, and then put a lid on it, and you're good to go, depending on what temperature it is and how big a piece of meat is and whatnot for cooking time.
Can I ask you about cooking oils? We have this debate at home. What's the best cooking oil to use when you're searing meat? Should you use vegetable oil, coconut oil, olive oil? What's the difference and why does it matter?
Well, coconut oil, I think, is an amazing oil. I think it's a really underutilized oil. The fat of coconuts, is, I think, has a lot of health benefits, along with avocado oil. Of course, like olive oil, they're higher in monounsaturated fats. Avocado oil is a fantastic fat, fantastic oil. And all of those have high smoke points. They have high, you can heat them up to like 400, 500 degrees on some of them. And they call it a smoke point, and it doesn't burn the oil. For instance, if you use extra virgin olive oil, they typically will tell you, even though being a great fat, great oil for you, as soon as you heat it up too much, it really ruins the properties and the light, delicate flavors of extra virgin olive oil. Typically, it's like finishing oil. But those oils, you mentioned the coconut oil, avocado oil, sure, olive oil, vegetable oil, canola oil, those are all fine. But I typically reach, if I'm cooking, especially for myself, like a nicer oil for you, healthier oil.
That's good to know. And I always forget about avocado oil as being even a choice. That's not something that I think about very often because we hear about extra virgin olive oil all the time. I feel like that's where, you know, it's in our face. But yeah.
Yeah. And just just quick note on those.
Yeah.
I always label read on the avocado oils or even olive oils in general. And I always look for something, the monounsaturated fat. I think that's a really important point, a key thing there. Because not all of them, just because it is an avocado oil or olive oil doesn't mean that it's necessarily higher in monounsaturated fat. That's really what you're looking for. So that's typically how I choose my oil.
All right. Thanks for that. Dan Fox is the chef and owner of Heritage Tavern in Madison with us today for a Food Friday conversation about the wide world of braising. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have a family recipe for something that cooks on the stove all day? What are your tried and true slow cooker tips? Do you have a favorite braised dish at a local restaurant and wonder how they do it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Shereen Seward in for Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our Food Friday talk with Dan Fox, chef and owner of Heritage Tavern in Madison. He's here to share how we can braise meats and vegetables like a pro this winter season. And we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. If you have questions for our guest, call 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@WPR.org. What about braising vegetables? Do you do much of that?
Sure, absolutely. I think 'tis the season for root vegetables, cabbage or Brussels sprouts, and all of those following a very similar process that you would for meat. It's a much less cooking time, of course. And yeah, I think it's a great utilization of seasonal vegetables right now.
So by themselves, I mean, do you just make vegetable dishes by themselves, braise them? Is that something that that's worth doing?
For sure, like featuring the vegetable as the main dish, like the entree almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually do that at our restaurant, Heritage Tavern, downtown Madison. We have a really lovely braised cabbage dish. We get some it's a local arrowhead cabbage from a local farm. And we take that just the same. We have a nice wedge that we sear. It's a pretty creative mixture. My sous chef, her name is Cookie. She came up with this recipe. Seared it off, deglazed with. So, again, that's when the pan's nice and hot and there's that caramelization that happens. And you get those little, that we call it fond, or little bits that caramelize the pans. the pan, you want to take advantage of that flavor, and we will hit a splash of white wine. And I think we're actually putting a little bit of mirin in as well, so rice wine. Nonetheless, then you want to reduce that down, and the French term for it is called à sec, and that means almost dry or just about dry, where you have a little, the smallest amount of that liquid left, and that's pretty much almost reduced down. And then you add in a broth of some kind. Typically with meat, it'll be a meat stock of some kind. And with a vegetable, you could be pretty creative there. You know, you could do a heavy tomato-driven broth, or you could do more of like a vegetable broth or a vegetable stock. We actually make a very specific vegetable stock for this dish, and then we will cook it very low and slow until when you pierce it with a knife, it comes out almost effortlessly. That's kind of the general idea with braising. That means it's pretty much done, whether it's meat or vegetable. Then you let it cool down in that liquid. That's a really important step.
Okay.
And once it cools down in the liquid, you remove the meat or the vegetable out, and then you reduce that liquid down. We reduce down the cabbage liquid and the white wine. And then we mount some butter in there, and then we put that. Then we put a little gratin, and this is at the restaurant. In the salamander, we gratin that up a little bit with some cheese, and then put it back on the plate, and then use that braising liquid that we reduced down to create the sauce for the dish. Really important step. There's a ton of flavors in that broth. And then we put a little rye crumble on top and some other garnishes, and it's an entree at our restaurant. All vegetable-driven.
It sounds delicious. We want to hear really what listeners think, too. If you have a question for our guest, 800-642-1234. Dan's happy to answer those. 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. I'm glad you brought up the broth thing because I wanted to ask you, a lot of people use broth and stock kind of interchangeably. What's the difference between them and when is one preferred over the other?
Well, a broth, for me, is just kind of a thinner version, like of a stock. So the stock that I like to use is whatever I'm cooking. I typically like that to be the stock that I'm using. So if it's like chicken thighs, for example, I use a chicken stock. Or for pork shoulder, I use a pork stock. And the same for beef, and on and on. And then for vegetables, like I mentioned, you can be a little bit more creative. Or for that matter, with meat, you know, there's milk braised pork shoulder. You have a lot of Italian dishes or other ethnic dishes that braise heavily in tomato. People will put dried fruits in. So when you, that broth or the liquid, you can really be pretty creative with that seasoning, and that can be a whole world all to its own. How to create really in-depth flavors there.
How much liquid should be in the mix here? I've heard that too much liquid is wrong.
Too much liquid is not great. It's the more liquid you have, the more flavor from the meat is dispersed in the liquid. And if there's too much, it can almost taste a little bland. And you really have to reduce down that liquid a lot more. In the general rule that I like to use is when you put in your, whether it's vegetables or meats, you'll just have just a little bit, maybe like an inch, 3 inches, depending on how big the piece of meat is, above the liquid surface. Mm-hmm. So you just have a little bit of exposed meat, and then typically would put a piece of parchment paper on top and then cover it with tinfoil or a lid. And you want to bring that liquid up to a boil before you put it in the oven. That's kind of another important step.
Okay. Well, we've got about 3 minutes left. Let's go to Dale from Stevens Point. Hi, Dale. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Quick question about sous vide and braising, the order that you would do that in, and any handy tips. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Dale.
For sous vide. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I heard.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's really amazing. I'm glad you brought that up. That sous vide really opens the window of opportunities for especially developing flavor and lowering that margin of error. You can almost – it's a little more foolproof doing the sous vide method. People that aren't familiar with sous vide, it's reduced oxygen packaging, and you can have a little machine that sucks all the air out of the bag. You put the piece of meat, typically you want to sear the piece of meat. So you really want to take the same steps that you would for a normal braise and put all of that in a bag. The liquid that you put in, the stock, the wine, the tomato, all that liquid, typically I want that to be a little bit more flavorful than I would maybe in a normal braise. I really want to make sure that that's a nice packs a punch. I would just be careful on your salt content. That sous vide can amplify the amount of salt by a little bit, so just be careful there, whether it's soy sauce or the types of salt. And if someone's already sous vide or familiar with sous vide, you would, of course, know that after you sear your vegetables, your meat, and your broth, that all needs to go into the bag cold. It's a very important step. If you put hot anything in a sous vide bag, typically, at least for me, it's always exploded in the machine and created a big mess. So, yeah, you really want to cool everything down, put everything in the bag, and then you put it into a water bath. So anyone who's sous vide-ing should probably know this step as well. But the next step is to cook in a water bath. You typically have a some kind of immersion circulator, they're called, or it's a temperature-controlled unit that you slide down into a water bath. You could also create a water bath on your stovetop or in your oven. Really what it is creating a consistent heat temperature of water, and whether it's maybe a typical temperature might be 190 degrees or something like that. You want that to stay at like 190 degrees the entire time it's cooking, and it lengthens the amount, the cooking time. As long as you're above, 140, 150 degrees, you can even flirt with going a little bit lower temperature. I shouldn't be necessarily telling you unless you really know what you're doing. But you can actually extend the cooking time a lot longer for like days almost. Okay. I don't recommend that for anyone at home. But if you're really curious, that is the idea. Or maybe let's just say for the entire day.
Okay.
And it's really interesting, like if you do a short rib.
It sounds great. And Dan, I'm sorry, that is all the time we have. But now I'm super hungry. So thank you so much for joining us. This has been great.
Yeah, this was really fun. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Dan Fox is the chef and owner of Heritage Tavern in Madison and the Fox Heritage Farms and Willow Creek Farms. He joined us for Food Friday for a behind-the-scenes look at his time on a national food competition show and a crash course in Braising 101, or how to create hearty, warming one-pot dishes at home.